The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
It's time to sit back, relax, and listen to Conversations with Joan. Conversations with Joan will inspire, motivate, and empower you. Live your best life now. Listen, learn, think, and decide. And now, here's your host, Joan Herman.
Welcome to Change Your Attitude, Change Your Life's Conversations with Joan. I'm Joan Herman. Thanks for tuning in. Conversations with Joan focuses on topics that are important to your life, from health and wellness to professional development to personal well-being. Changemakers join me to share their insights, tips, and strategies so you can thrive and live your best life now. Thank you for taking time for yourself, and thank you for letting us be a part of your life. Now, let's start talking. Mental health challenges are real and they're common. It's been reported that 1 in 5 adults experience some form of mental illness in a given year, and nearly 1 in 5 children have some type of serious mental illness. Joining us today to discuss how we can support individuals struggling with mental health challenges and their loved ones is Kay Warren. Kay co-founded Saddleback Church with her husband Rick. After the death of her son Matthew, who lived with serious mental illness for most of his life, she founded Saddleback's Hope for Mental Health Initiative as a way to support individuals and family members of loved ones with mental illness and suicide ideation. In 2019, Kay started Breathe, a ministry to support parents of children with serious mental illness. Kay was a board member of the National Action Alliance for Suicide Prevention. She's the author of multiple books, including Choose Joy, Because Happiness Isn't Enough. Welcome, Kay. Thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, it's my privilege. Thank you so much, Joan.
Kay, I'm happy that we're having this conversation because this is such an important topic. The statistics are alarming. 1 in 5 adults experiencing some form of mental illness in a given year. And this is the one that really got to me. Nearly 5 million children, 1 in 5, has some type of serious mental illness. What do you believe is happening in our society that's driving this problem?
You know, those statistics are staggering. It means millions and millions of people, around 45 million people in the United States, just in the United States, are living with mental health challenges. And those numbers have been increasing through the years. And I think that the last 4 years in particular have really increased the amount of mental health challenges that we're all living with. I mean, the world has always been a bit of a dumpster fire with chaos and war and poverty and pandemic diseases and violence. I mean, that is kind of what it means to live in this broken world of ours. But the last 4 years has seen an increase in almost every area of mental health challenges. From the rate of suicide has increased in the United States. The amount of teenagers that are experiencing mental health challenges. More teenagers are visiting emergency rooms, as you mentioned, you know, the number of kids who are affected. But the studies are showing that teenagers are showing up in emergency rooms with either panic or depression or suicidal thoughts or suicidal attempts. We, as a people, are just not doing quite as well. And I think that all that happened in the last 4 years, from the COVID pandemic to political unrest to racial injustice, I mean, you put it all together and mental health challenges have gone up. One other thing that's super important that is causing an increase, particularly among teenagers, is technology. And if you don't have to be a scientist to figure this out, just a little bit of reading or research will show that the effects of technology and social media, particularly on adolescent girls, is staggering. There are people coming, you know, you can't put the genie back in the bottle, but there are some people who are really urging parents to be incredibly careful with how much technology and particularly social media they're allowing their children and adolescents to be exposed to, because it's nothing but damaging. Nothing.
Well, I always said I would hate to be a young girl today, because, you know, when I'm older, so when I was a teenager or in high school, you went to school and you dealt with whatever you dealt with during the day, but you were able to come home and unplug from it. But now whatever you're experiencing is hitting you 24/7. You just can't get away from it.
Absolutely. And it's beginning to affect. I heard recently that social media and technology itself, not even social media, and right now it's technology, is affecting the number of people who are actually going to college. When you've got a YouTube video that explains, you know, the history of the world in with graphics and at super fast speed, and you can get a whole course in, you know, 20, 30 minutes, why would you go to college and take that course over a semester? It's really showing up in, like, more youth are not getting their driver's license. You know, it's not that they're just delaying it. They're just not getting it. Why would you do that when you have access to Uber or you have other ways of getting around? So technology is changing our lives, and it is affecting our mental health as well. We have to be really careful about our bodies and our minds as a result.
So you know the kids aren't going to give this up. What will it take to get the parents to take control of this?
I'm a grandmother now, and I am very close to my five grandchildren, and I watch my children parenting their children, and as you said, I don't envy them. Honestly, it is very, very difficult and very challenging, and you have to be incredibly intentional as a parent. I think you have to decide you're not going to just follow the crowd. And, well, everybody else has this technology, everybody else has this, so our kids are going to have this as well. I think there has to be an intentionality without going back to Little House on the Prairie days. You know, that's not what I'm saying. But somehow there has to be a recognition of this is not a benign thing. Technology, social media, those are not benign entities. Those are things that can actually affect us in very dramatic ways. So then parents have to be intentional about building connections with their kids. I think that we have, I watch a lot of families surrender, if you will, just go ahead and wave that white flag of, you know, yeah, I can't put the genie back in the bottle. I can't get away from this technology. I can't get away from all the social media stuff. I can't get away from it. But so they end up just surrendering to it rather than saying, yes, that is the world we live in. So what can we do in our family to increase connection, face-to-face time when people aren't on their phones, when people aren't watching TV, when they aren't using some other form of entertainment? How can we do face-to-face interaction, whether that's at mealtimes or there's a certain time set apart every day just to look each other in the eye, check in, talk about the day, talk about what's going on? It's tough. It's really tough. I don't want to in any way minimize it or sugarcoat it, make it seem easy. But we do have to make some intentional choices that will directly impact our mental health as well as our physical health.
Kay, why is this work so important to you? Why has this become your mission?
Because I've seen the effects of mental health challenges at its worst. When we lost our son Matthew to suicide in 2013, it's undoubtedly the worst thing that's ever happened to me, to our families. It's been 11 years. This year will be 11 years in April. And in some ways, I have not recovered at all, because I don't know that we ever get over the loss of a child. I think it's silly to even think about getting over loss, but we're getting through it. And so while in some ways I would say I have this terrible thing that happened in my life that nothing is ever going to change, I'm also able to say, but life is also wonderful. And I do laugh more than I cry. And I have more good days now than bad days. But I've seen the effects of mental illness at its worst how it can consume someone's life and actually cause them to end their lives. And I want other families to have support we didn't have. I want other families to have information we didn't have. I want individuals to have hope in ways that our son Matthew didn't. And so I think everything that I'm doing right now has a bit of a search for redemption, if you will. How can there be something good and beautiful that comes out of the worst thing that has ever happened to us? And how can we turn his suffering and his death into something that maybe relieves suffering and prevents death for other people?
You know, we talked about those statistics, and they're not, I don't believe, really reflective of what's going on out there. There are so many people feeling depressed or battling suicidal thoughts that aren't reporting it. And, you know, I'm one of those people. Back in 2010, and I always thought I was a very strong person, and I am a very strong person, but in a period of 5 months, my mother died, my son left for college, my 23-year marriage ended, and my sister died. And I had already lost my father and brother. And so this would have been the first time I would have been responsible for myself. And I had given up my earning power to take care of my children in our marriage. And so I was so broken and in such a dark hole, I spent a great deal of time planning my suicide. I never thought I would have been that person, ever. But I didn't see a way forward. And I would go out during the day and live my life. I would do my show. I took care of my children. I had social interactions with my friends. But when I went home at night, I would literally lie in a fetal position on the floor, sobbing, trying to figure out a way to get out of all of this. But I wore a really good mask. No one in my life at that time knew what I was going through. Do you think there are a lot more people like me that are walking around today with that mask on?
Oh, absolutely. Well, I'll probably get the quote wrong. Was it Thoreau who said most people live lives of quiet desperation? And I think it's so true. I think we are, all of us, pretty good at masking. You know, in America, we've got that can-do, independent cowboy on the range, able to just make it. We're tough. We're strong. We're survivors. We're winners. We're the ones who win wars. You know, we don't lose wars. We win wars. We're the world's protector. We see ourselves as, I think, Americans as very tough and resilient individuals. I think other societies, other cultures around the world have a much better handle on the collective and the communal aspects of life that I think we were meant to live. We weren't meant to live alone. We weren't meant to try to figure it all out by ourselves. In my faith tradition, God talks about how we're all part of a body. We're all part of the same body, and we all then have a place in that body. You know, the toe matters, the elbow matters, you know, the head matters. The heart, every bit of the body is needed for a body to be healthy. And a lot of other cultures and societies have that as their value, and they're much more communally focused. I think that's one of the things that immigrants bring to America that is a blessing, actually. It's a focus more on family and being together and how you don't make decisions just on your own, but you're part of a collective. And so I think that's how we're meant to live. We're always seeking connection, but I do really believe what you said. Well, first of all, I want to go back and just say, Joan, I'm so sorry for all those losses and all that pain that you experienced and the ways that it led you to wondering if you could even keep going. I mean, my heart really resonates with you on that. And if we were in the same room right now, I'd reach over and give you a big hug or at least pat your hand because that's a very intense experience that you just relayed. And I don't think you're alone in that. I do think many other people are experiencing that sense of, even though and I'm not the first to say this by any means, but even with all of the technology, all of the social media, all of the, quote, ways to be connected, we are not. We are more isolated internally than I think we've ever been. So, yeah, definitely you are not alone, or we're not alone in that, carrying your pain and your burdens by yourself.
I read where you had said that your greatest ministry always comes out of your deepest pain. And that experience that I described, that's why I started doing this work. I always say God has a sense of humor. I was a middle-aged woman from a small town in New Jersey that had this idea that I ran with. And so here I am all these years later doing, you know, doing this, but it came from the seeds of that pain.
Yep.
And we all have that opportunity.
Well, we do. My husband says that even a broken tree can bear fruit. You know, even a broken, and I think that's somebody sent, after my husband said that publicly, somebody sent us a picture of an oak tree that had been hit by lightning, and there was one very, very large branch and that had split, you know, from the tree. It was still attached at the roots, but for all practical purposes, it was separate, you know, and had been just completely hit by this lightning bolt and was lying on its side. And yet it was, you know, sprouting new branches. And it was this powerful metaphor of what does happen out of our own brokenness. Even broken trees, you know, can still bear fruit, can still be productive. And your life is an example of that. And I hope ours is as mm-hmm. well.
Well, so if there are a lot more people like me that wore that mask and hid the way they were feeling, because I thought it was a sign of weakness back then. If we're feeling that we're weak or that there's something wrong with us and we're not letting people into what we're going through, how can friends and loved ones pay attention to maybe some signs that we're putting out?
Yeah, and there are some signs that people are not doing well. One of the things I said during the pandemic that gave me great freedom is I heard someone else say, I'm not doing well, but I'm doing okay. And I grabbed onto that because it felt so real and true to the way I was experiencing life, which is, yes, in many ways, I'm not doing well. I'm not. There's a lot of struggle. There's a lot of pain. There's a lot of suffering. There's a lot of loss. I will always miss my son, as I said. So in one sense, I'm not doing well, but I'm okay. And I think what you're mentioning is getting to the place of where we're also able to say, hey, I'm not doing well and I'm not okay. And it's in that admission of I'm not okay that I actually might need some help, that I actually might need something to get me out of this place that I'm at is something that we need to be aware of for everybody. You know, in suicide prevention training, they talk about you know, asking questions, noticing that a coworker maybe who is typically very relational and is the one who's standing at the water cooler, wants to talk to everybody else, is not there. They're at their desk. They're not coming to they're not joining in the office, you know, laughter, or somebody's missing work, or somebody is not able to, they're not at class. They aren't showing up at the bowling league like they have. Just noticing what's going on in the lives of the people around us is such I think the starting place. And then once you start looking at somebody and you see that maybe they're eating too much, more than they did, or maybe they're eating too little, maybe they're drinking too much, you know, something's different there. They're the things that they loved, they're not participating in, or they don't care about anymore. All of those are signs that we're not doing well and probably need some help. Even if it's just a friend saying, are you okay? Are you doing okay? I noticed that, you know, and then you fill in the gap. I've noticed that you just don't seem yourself lately. Is it, you know, can I help? Is there anything you want to talk about? And people may say, oh, I'm fine. You know, they may not feel the freedom or the comfort or the safety to be able to give you an answer. But just knowing that somebody is paying attention to you and notices that you are not yourself can go such a long way in helping us know we're not alone in our struggles. So I would say first is just notice, pay attention to other people, what's going on, how they're maybe changing, they're not themselves. Ask a question, ask them if they're doing okay, ask them if there's anything you can do. And then if that persists, it's okay to ask that question, you know, are you thinking of taking your life? Are you in a place in which you really might need more help than even I can give you? And then being with that person and offering to say that, that is such a powerful suicide prevention message that can be applied in, on a smaller scale to all of our interactions, looking out for each other and noticing and telling somebody, I see you. I see what's going on. And I'm here for you. I think those are things that all of us can do that don't require not a lot of training. They don't require, you know, any particular skill. It's just about being a walking through this world with an air of compassion and caring about a fellow human being.
Kay, where can our listeners go to get more information about you and your work?
KayWarren.com is where they can go.
Kay, thank you so much for joining us to talk about this important topic.
Thank you for the invitation. I appreciate it so much.
This is Conversations with Joan. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Do you feel lost on your journey to health and happiness? Then let us guide you on your path. Personalized actions towards health. Your path is a series of choices you act on every day. We guide you on a personalized journey of dietary, exercise, genetic, supplement, and lifestyle choices that lead you to optimal health and happiness. Often taking the road less traveled leads to liberation. Your path is personal. Your journey, like you, is unique. Take action today. Head to bestpathforme.com. Again, that's bestpathforme.com.
We all want to live a happy, productive life, but sometimes we just need a little help. Our Coach on Call experts provide strategies to help you live your best life now. Joining us today is Emanuela Fassoni, a certified health and life coach who has helped people experience breakthroughs in their health and lives. She's the author of the book, Healing Through Nature's Medicine. Emanuela is here today to discuss the importance of eating a balanced diet. Welcome, Emanuela. Thank you so much for joining us.
Hi, Joan. I'm really happy to be here with you.
Emanuela, it seems like so many people today are struggling with a variety of different types of health ailments. Why do you believe these types of issues are on the rise?
Well, unfortunately, Joan, nutritional medical physicians believe that most degenerative conditions have their origin in the malfunction of the digestive tract and the liver's elimination process. In other words, you know, illness can be directly related to the problems of the digestive and liver detoxification systems and their related influence on immune, nervous, and the endocrine functions. So therefore, when the health of the digestive and liver detoxification systems are addressed, the body is given the opportunity to reverse many degenerative conditions.
So, Emanuel, if we have this type of power within our control, whatever we put on the end of our fork, why do you think so many of us don't do it?
I think it really has to do with self-sabotage. I think it has to do with procrastination and that inner critic that we all have, that we do have the power to move past that with really making small, manageable changes each day. Even if someone made a 1% improvement on a weekly basis, that all adds up to big results.
Well, and we get all of this messaging too, that there's a simple way out. Just take a pill and it'll solve all your problems.
That's right. That's right.
Why do you believe it's so important that we eat a balanced diet?
So it's important because your body needs six key factors every day to run optimally. And that is clean protein, healthy fats, carbohydrates, ample clean water, vitamins, and minerals. The key to a healthy diet is balance and moderation. So choosing foods from nature, alternating between different families of fruits and vegetables and seeds, nuts, beans, and grains, and enjoy them in a various different forms like raw and sprouted or cooked. By understanding and respecting this balance, you can make informed dietary choices that support your well-being.
Emanuel, we were talking about the messaging. Somewhere along the way, we learned that eating healthy means deprivation.
Absolutely not. And that is really what I focus on with my clients is it's not about focusing on what you don't get to eat. It's about focusing on all the great foods that give you energy, that are making you feel less brain fog, that are helping you to optimize your health. So it's more about focusing on what you do get to eat versus what you don't get to eat. And there are so many yummy, delicious alternatives to basically anything, any food that someone loves, there's a healthy alternative for you.
If you would like to learn more about Emanuela and her work and what we've been talking about, you can visit her website, embodyvitality.net. And as always, to hear more from Emanuela, you can visit our website, cyacual.com/Emanuela Fasoni. Joining us, I hope you found the show informative. At Change Your Attitude, Change Your Life, we believe that knowledge is power. Take what you've learned, apply it, and live your best life now. Remember that the information provided is the opinion of our guest and should never replace the advice of a professional who knows your personal situation. If you'd like more information, visit our website, cyacyl.com. That stands for Change Your Attitude, Change Your Life. While on our site, listen to past shows on demand, read the digital magazine, sign up for our mailing list, and be sure to follow the show on social media. Until next time, this is Joan Herman. Thanks for tuning in.
The preceding pre-recorded program sponsored by Maximilian Communications.
3-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to salemnow.com. Salemnow.com.